It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I am Dave Richmond, along with Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, man?
Kyle News, watching the dogs.
Nikki, getting a bath. We are.
That's right.
It's bath time with Nikki, with Kyle from LaGrange Barber, ladies and gentlemen, and Jason. So there you go. And Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you?
Doing well, guys.
By the way, folks, if you're wondering about the spinoff show we have, will Bubba ever buy a truck, a car? We'll find out. That will be, we'll announce.
We're going to do a poll. Did Bubba buy a truck or a Nissan Altima?
Knowing our listeners, I'm pretty sure the truck would win like 93%. I don't know. That's my guess. But Bubba's a numbers guy, but I'll say 93% truck, 7% Altima. What do you think?
I think all of our listeners except Barry Kearney will buck truck.
You call it out Barry, our good Barry buddy Barry?
Barry hates trucks.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Why does Barry hate trucks? Because they're not good on gas mileage and expenses?
No, not because
he
has an SUV. He has a Jeep SUV. He grew up on a farm and associates pickup. He likes to deny his heritage,
his roots.
of being from the Jason area of Greene County, and he grew up on a farm, and so he had enough pickup trucks growing up, and he doesn't want anything to do with them now.
And tell Barry just like the Parmalee song, tell him he can't outrun these roots.
Exactly.
That's right. Oh my God! Yeah, don't forget where you came from, Barry. Don't be like NASCAR, Barry. Don't forget where you came from.
He hates country music also.
Oh, my God. Barry, come on, buddy. Barry sits right near me at the ball games. And by the way, folks, we've got a big...
And Andy kicks puppies.
Oh, really? Okay, well, come on, Barry. We love you, Barry.
That's
you're one of the best pirates out there. Come on, Barry.
He doesn't kick puppies.
Okay.
Barry's a real man of genius.
Yes, he is. Anyway, we actually have a big game on Saturday. We'll be talking about that with the Pirates and SMU. And I know, Bubba, we've got two great guests for the weekend podcast, right?
Yeah, we're going to be catching up with Billy Embody from the Pony Stampede. That's SMU's 24/7 site. And Billy also does work for Go 24/7, which is LSU's 24/7 sports site. And, of course, he's going to be down in New Orleans covering the big game on Monday night. So we're going to talk East Carolina SMU basketball with him, and then switch gears and talk LSU Clemson.
Does that go with an X?
Yeah, I guess. And Billy's going to have plenty of B's. I don't know. We'll see if he goes to Bourbon Street. We'll ask him about that later on. And then also we have another great, speaking of the national championship game, we have our good buddy from Clemson, right?
Yeah, we're going to catch up with Will Vandervoort from the Clemson Insider. We had him on the show last year prior to the national championship game between Clemson and Alabama. So it was great to have Will back on and get his insight on Monday's matchup.
And if Clemson wins, then that'll keep our streak going that we had him on before each national. He'll have to do that every year for Dabo to keep winning a national championship, right?
I'm pulling for LSU, guys.
Are you going to LSU?
Yeah, I'm pulling for LSU.
I know why, because you love yeah, you have a
somebody that I've made fun of for years, and
you have a bromance with him.
Well, I admire his story. I admire, to me, he's a great case study for learning from your mistakes and reinventing yourself. And you know, one of the biggest, when I watched an interview with him, and one of the things that stuck with me, he said, is when he was at Ole Miss, he wanted everybody to be like him, and he had to learn to let people be themselves. And I don't know, that kind of stuck with me, and I respect him for anybody who can just literally be a laughingstock, be a clown, and then turn your career around to the highest level possible.
Yeah.
An amazing story if you think about it.
Yeah, like
it really is. It sounds like a movie, don't it?
Yeah. What were you going to say, Bob?
Oh, I was going to say, like you were saying, as far as Ed Orgeron, I think you're probably referring to that 15 to 20 minute sit down interview you had with Tim Brando. It was so good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But guys, Kyle, you mentioned his time at Ole Miss. And speaking of Ole Miss, obviously they made a coaching change, bringing in Lane Kiffin several weeks back, and Mississippi State followed suit on parting ways with Joe Moorhead, and we talked that decision here recently with Steve Robertson from Dean's Page. Mississippi State 24/7 site. Yeah, that was an interesting move to part ways with Joe Moorhead, no doubt. But we found out today that there's going to be a pirate in Sark, Vegas, and that is Mike Leach. He's going to be leaving Pullman, Washington to guide the Bulldogs. And so what do you guys think about that?
Great hire. I don't know how it's going to work out in terms of wins and losses. I don't know how he's going to fit into the SEC. Something tells me not well. But it will be entertaining as all hell. You talk about one of the most unique people in college football, one of the best offensive minds in the game. A lot of personality there. Saban hates that style of football. Can you just imagine if they upset Alabama? Can you just imagine? Oh,
that'll be great. That'll be sweet. Yeah, Mike Leach is, like, to me, a great example of what coaches should be, and that is a personality. I can't stand it when a coach is so serious. Mike Leach is one of the funniest coaches out there. Not only is he funny, but
he can be serious, but he
I know. I'm just saying that, in other words, he's a personality. You don't forget Mike Leach. There's a lot of coaches you go, oh, God, I forgot. That's right. I forgot he was there, or, you know, I forgot about him. Well, if you know anything about everybody who's listened to this podcast, probably knows who Mike Leach is. If you don't, Google him, do your homework. But Mike Leach is, to me, he's one of the ones I wish we had had at East Carolina. But anyways, head coach, but that's nor here nor there. But he actually is someone, I think, Kyle, we've talked about it before in the podcast. I think he got a raw deal at Texas Tech.
Oh, yeah.
It was the media-driven story and a bunch of parents that were,
it was one parent. It was
Craig James.
One parent that's an ass clown that's not working in, I don't even think he's working in college football anywhere these days.
Nope.
Craig the Pony James. And then an AD basically that wanted to get out of a contract that he thought was too high. Leach's contract had gotten really high for those times at Texas Tech, and I really think that AD wanted out of that contract. They were paying him, you know, this has been 10 years ago now, they were paying him around $2.5 million a year, if I remember right, Bubba. And I think that had a lot to do with that AD being okay with getting rid of him despite the success.
Yeah, I don't recall exactly those numbers on that contract, Kyle, but I was just, as far as some of the numbers he put up in terms of wins and losses there in Lubbock, I mean, he was there 10 years. He never won less than 7 ball games, won as many as 11 that year where they knocked off Texas and finished 11-2. And
that was the year before he was fired.
I believe you're right, 2008, I want to say. But went to 10 bowl games in as many seasons, and then at Washington State, that was a program that was really struggling when he took over, and he did have 3 or 4 losing seasons, but 3 of those losing seasons were his first 3 years when he's trying to get things going, and then he really had a nice run, winning anywhere from 8 to as many as 11 bowl games over, I think, the next 4 or 5 seasons, and then he did have a 6-7 record this year, but I know this.
Trevor Washington State, Bubba, it's arguably, it has to be between them and Duke circa 94, 95, 90, excuse me, Duke circa 04 to 07. It has to be between them and Washington State before Leach got there as the worst BCS programs in history during the BCS era.
Yeah, I mean, Duke had that period where there was 4 years. Imagine being a football player and you never win a game. There were players at Duke that had no wins as a player. I can't imagine that in a college career. That's just unbelievable, unacceptable.
Yeah, they had definitely been right there in the conversation. Obviously, Kansas is somebody else that would have been right there. But, but kind of, I guess, maybe to counter my own point, Kansas did have those two or three seasons under Mark Mangino, where they went 2-1 in Orange Bowl.
No, that's true. And what you just said, now I'm talking about immediately prior to Leach. The head coach prior to Leach, they were just god-awful. I mean, there was times where, if I remember correctly, sometime during that period, I want to say they got blown out by an FBS team. I'll have to look back at that. But it was bad.
Yeah, not good.
I was just going to say one of the reasons Mississippi State really likes Mike Leach is because of what we're recounting, and that's the tremendous job he did at a program in the Big 12 and then the Pac-12 that was a so-called has-not, kind of a middle of the road or bottom feeder prior to him getting there.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder. You know, I wonder with the Mike Leach hire, I don't know, maybe Joe Moorhead was a boring guy. I really don't have a problem with that if he's a winner. But in a conference full of personalities, an Ole Miss hires Lane Kiffin, who has a personality, to me it's not a very likable one. You know, they bring in the guy in Mike Leach that, I mean, you talk about personality. And Leach also, you know, Mississippi State's never going to have the most talent in the SEC. They're going to have plenty of it. But, you know, Leach kind of doesn't win by having the most talent. He wins by having guys who can run his system.
Right. And they have the facilities we were talking about this week. And they also have, I mean, you look at it, I feel like it's a great move. And certainly it's a guy that he's won where he's been before, so they don't have to worry about taking a chance on a coordinator or somebody that's getting their first head coaching job or first FBS job, whatever. This is a guy that I think it's a solid hire. I think that he'll do very well. And the problem will be is that if he gets 8 or 9 wins a year, which I think he will, is that enough for Mississippi State? Now, I'm picking on them. There are plenty of colleges out there that are in the same boat that they don't realize they've got, including ours at East Carolina. If you don't realize you have a great thing with 8 or 9 wins, you think you should be winning 10, 12 games a year. And sometimes that's just not everybody can win every single game. So,
I think East Carolina is a little different. I don't think it's 8 or 9 wins our fan base minds. It's once we start doing that, and then we have a little fall off of 5 wins, or
right,
they can't stand that little fall off. When, look, man, maybe they'll realize that this time, once Houston gets it back going, now that we've done this crap twice with John Thompson and Scotty Montgomery.
They've been there, done that.
You make the wrong hire, you're going to be praying for 5 wins.
That's a great point. Hey, Bubba, you want to go to our first guest?
Yeah, but actually, before we do, you were talking about guys getting their first jobs. This guy is a guy that's been a GA both for East Carolina and the last few years for Oklahoma. Damon Magazu, who played for the Pirates from 2010 to 2013, who's obviously so well known for that pick of Russell Wilson to win that 2010 game in overtime over NC State. Congratulations to Damon. He is the new safeties coach at UNLV.
I'm very happy for him. He's a great guy. Come on the podcast and blew up the man. That I remember that on SoundCloud. That got, what was it, 1,300 listens, something like that, Bubba? I remember that, something like that.
Yeah, it was a lot, far and away more than anyone else.
Yeah, I was like,
also,
good God,
guys,
almighty.
We need to talk about a coaching change at East Carolina.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. Defensive line coach, a 46-year veteran of the business, Jeff Hansen, has decided to hang up the whistle.
And he has going all the way back to like 74. I mean, it's amazing.
And also Houston, another interesting note about him, he is the oldest of the Hansen brothers.
I used to go to start singing Bop. I guess they're getting back together. That was great, Kyle. Appreciate you. Circa 1997, Kyle. Thank you.
Yes,
for bringing me back 23 years ago. Thank you, sir. Hansen is actually.
Any speculation, guys, who's going to replace him?
I tell you, one person that came to mind two people that came to mind that Bubba threw out to us in the group chat. We'll open that up. Mark Yellick, I know you put that name up there, and David Blackwell. I don't know if David wants to not just be a position coach, but God, that would be fantastic if we could get David Blackwell in, knowing, because I'll tell you why. I don't think Hanson was asked to leave. I think he was just tired of coaching. He was ready to leave, and Bob Trott is in his 60s as well. So, you know, if Bob Trott leaves in a couple years too, or next year, the year after, David Blackwell's right there on your staff. That's just my opinion, and we talked about that recently, about coaching waiting kind of thing, but I don't know if you ever do that as a coordinator, but David Blackwell, I want him back on the staff. He was great with the media. He is a Pirate. He understands the culture, great recruiter, great defensive mind. I mean, I like Mark Yellick too. Either one of those would be great, but there's plenty of people we can get. I
want to see Rick Smith and making that transition from coaching the secondary to coaching the D-line.
Oh my God, that would be awesome.
But, you know,
he could do it.
Coach Blackwell is without a job. He just got fired at Old Dominion. Now, I don't know. You know, who knows how him and Coach Houston, maybe they didn't have good chemistry when they talked to each other when he was here last December when Houston got here. Who knows? Maybe he's got too much pride to come back. I will say this, Bob, or Dave, you said you don't know if he wants to be a position coach. I got a feeling he's probably going to have to decide if he wants to be a position coach or be a defensive coordinator at the FCS level. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know that he'll get an opportunity to be a defensive coordinator right away at the FCS level, despite at Old Dominion this past year, their defense was pretty good despite their record.
But he's had 2 years in a row where he was defensive coordinator, and unfortunately the head coach got caught, fired. I don't think it had anything to do with him, but it's guilty by association, right?
Yes. So he may have to decide whether it's here or somewhere else. If he wants to keep coaching in FBS, he may have to take a position coach job, but he'll have ample opportunity to be a defensive coordinator at the FBS level, successful. And, you know, but will it be in East Carolina? I'd love to see him come back home and be here for more than just 1 year. But, you know, Mike Houston may have somebody in mind. There may be guys that, you know, he has experience with that he wants to bring in. Where's Mark Yellick at these days, guys?
I don't know. He was this week here.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not sure. I know after Russ Staff got let go that he spent at least a year, if not more, on the staff in North Texas, but I'm not sure now. But like you said, Dave, let's go ahead and get to that first guest. Let's talk SMU East Carolina basketball and also LSU Clemson, and we're going to catch up with Billy Embody from Go247 and also the Pony Stampede right now.
Well, Bubba, there's a big game on Saturday at a nice little homestand for the Pirates at Williams Arena at Midgies Coliseum, and love having our guest on yet again.
Yeah, very excited to talk about this game between the Pirates and the Mustangs and to get the SMU perspective. Let's catch up with Billy Embody from SMU's 24/7 site. And then, Billy, welcome into the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
No doubt about it. One of the things we talked about with you recently was about SMU football, but how are things so far on the hardwood for the Mustangs?
Yeah, the basketball team has kind of been a little bit of a mixed bag. You sit there and you see an 11-2 record and a 1-0 mark in AAC play, but they've had one of the easiest schedules in the entire country. They just got really what I would say would be is their marquee win on the year so far with their 92-81 overtime win at Vanderbilt on Saturday. It's just a quadrant two win, but say what you want about it. They rallied from down 15 in the final minutes to force OT and then pulled away for a pretty comfortable win after that. But look, I mean, I think as they navigate the AAC and start to get into, you know, the meat of their conference schedule, we'll get a better idea of where they really stand. But just because they haven't played anyone and for the most part, their two losses that they've had have been against the only quality-ish teams on their schedule. So we'll have a better idea of really where they stand, but right now it's a lot of positivity. I mean, anytime you see an 11-2 mark up there right now.
Billy, as you take a look at things, I guess what Coach Jankovic is in his fourth season now, and so I guess year one was that 31 season, if I'm not mistaken, and then the last 2 years have been right around 500 with one just above, and then last year just below, both of those years, 6-12 in the American. So just generally speaking, before we dive more into this club, what's the fan base feelings toward Coach Jankovic?
It's not really going well over for Tim Jankovic, I would say, after the last couple of years. And look, I mean, he got dealt a pretty bad hand in a way with the sanctions on scholarship restrictions and losing guys like Shake Milton and Dre Foster and certain guys to injury over the last two seasons. But look, when you don't recruit at a high level, it's very difficult to mask some of those issues. And that 30-win team you referenced, I mean, they had six guys that they played. I believe they had six, and then a seventh was like a rotational guy off the bench who would come play a few minutes a night. But that was a team that was limited just by numbers overall, and they won 30 games. And then the next 2 years, because the recruiting has dropped off so significantly under Jankovic, it's been a struggle to kind of replicate that success. And then they had some injuries, like I mentioned. But this team, I think this is their first year without any scholarship restrictions. And look, to be honest, the SMU fan base is seeing kind of that up and down play because they haven't recruited well, because they hadn't put a real priority on it until last spring, when they added about, I think, six new faces to the roster. So right now he's not really in good graces. He's got to make the NCAA tournament, in my mind, to save his job. And I think rightfully so. It's just been such a drop off from Larry Brown.
Billy, I was going to ask you that very question about recruiting, since you're the 24/7 site there for SMU. Do you see any hope as far as basketball is concerned, recruiting-wise, from this point? I know you said, obviously, just right there, that he's going to have to make the tournament, but the fans, if they see a big recruiting class coming in, would they be patient, or is it definitely kind of like do or die?
Yeah, I think right, it is do or die. And look, there's not any 2020 guys that they can recruit. They don't have a senior on their roster right now, and so they're in a position where they're more likely than not, you know, going to have a fairly similar roster next year. You might see somebody transfer out, one or two guys transfer out, but they haven't been, and that's really been kind of more of a Tim Jankovic thing, they haven't been really keen on being, what I would say, honest with some of these players on the roster, like a Will Douglas or a C.J. White, and saying, hey, you know, not seeing you as a big contributor or not seeing you as somebody that can play at this level, maybe you should explore some options and you know, drop down or see if there's a transfer or things like that. Because, I mean, they turned over the roster a good bit in the spring, but you saw Jimmy Witt leave, you saw Jamal McMurray graduate, and I would say they did an adequate job replacing them with guys like Tyson Jolly and Kendrick Davis. But overall, they just haven't found those legit guys that can come and change a program like Larry Brown did with Sterling Brown and Ben Moore, who weren't even, I would say, highly, highly touted guys. They were just really good basketball players that were developed and, you know, eventually were the winningest players in SMU history by the end of it. So it's the spring kind of gave some people some hope, but they don't even have a scholarship right now in 2020 to get people kind of excited about, you know, new players coming in.
Billy, taking a look at this team, this team can really score, averaging close to 80 points a ball game, shooting right around 48% from the floor. And they shoot the three fairly well. And then from the free throw line, they're stellar, right there pushing 80% as well. And so talk a little bit about this team offensively. Another number that jumped out at me is they're averaging close to 17 assists a game.
Yeah, Kendrick Davis, like I mentioned, since he's been eligible, the TCU transfer has been excellent. He actually just picked up kind of the weekly honor roll, honors from the AAC for his play in the past week, 18 points, 7.5 assists, 1.5 rebounds, 2 steals between the two games last week against Vanderbilt and USF. And look, I mean, he's the one that really makes this thing go. When he's playing at his best, things are going well. When he faces maybe some better competition, like we've seen in their two losses, he's kind of been a little bit more up and down, a little bit more erratic in his play. And look, I think he's somebody that's kind of still getting used to playing this volume of minutes like he has this season. And he's going to be a really good player for this program. But right now, I mean, he just, you know, when you face good competition, it just kind of is a little bit more inconsistent. And I think that's kind of an issue with the entire team. They were up by double digits against Vanderbilt and Roland, and then they totally fell asleep at the wheel, and then all of a sudden we're down 15. And so this offense can go. It can go in spurts. But I'm really interested to see how they're going to do against better competition in the AAC, because much of their non-conference games and matchups were just non-competitive basketball games.
And Billy, as far as when you were talking about and the fan base most likely expecting him to go to the tournament to keep his job, how do you feel? Do you think this team, I know it's still early on and they're very, very early in conference play, but how do you feel as far as this team? Do you feel confident that they could make the NCAA, or do you think it may be NIT at best?
I think right now it's NIT at best, just because when you look at the AAC, you look at, you know, Houston, you look at some of these other teams, Wichita, and the way they're playing, I mean, I find it tough to think that they're going to be able to rattle off, I think, double-digit wins in conference play that they're going to need to secure an NCAA bid because of how bad their non-conference was. I mean, if 20 wins is a great mark, but with the non-conference schedule that they have, they're only good win is against Vanderbilt, and it's a quadrant two, it's not even a quadrant one, so they're going to have to come up with some truly big wins in AAC play while also hitting that 20 win mark, or else I think they're going to end up getting snuffed because of how bad their out of conference schedule was.
One of the things you talk about this club offensively, Billy, and when I was looking over the numbers earlier today, like you mentioned, Kendrick Davis, and you have Isaiah Mike, Tyson Jolly, and Ferran Hunt, and all four of those guys averaging more than 13 points a ball game. And then they also, all of them rebounded very well, particularly Mike, Jolly, and Hunt, and averaging more than 6.5 boards per ball game. So, in addition to those four, are there any others on the roster that Pirate Nation should really be aware of that could have a breakout game, even though they may not have done so consistently?
Yeah, I think Ethan Shagwa is coming into his own in conference play. He's been really, really, I think, somebody that's been up and down, but he's got the talent. I mean, when Ethan Shagwa is on and he's in it, I mean, Tim Jankovic was talking about it Monday night about how he watched Ethan before the game in the shoot around, and he was just kind of bouncing all over the place in a good way, and it had energy, looked engaged and all that, and he goes out and he has one of his better games, and that's what SMU needs. That's the type of player that SMU knows is in Ethan Shagwa. It's a matter of consistently having that on the floor, and when he is, he's one of the better teams or one of the better players in the AAC.
Dave, did you have anything else about Saturday's matchup?
No, I was. We were going to shift gears, Billy. That's what I thought you were going to, Bubba. We're going to shift gears now, and I know you're going to be there at the national championship game, and just want to get your thoughts about, I guess, starting what time you're going, and kind of give us a little preview of what you're doing before even the game.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting time, man. I think for it to be in New Orleans and for LSU to be there is going to make it extra special. And, you know, it's – I don't even know what New Orleans is going to be like for this game, but it is that's going to be the most difficult part of it, I think, is luckily for us, you know, media folk, we are lucky to have a media shuttle that goes right into the Superdome. And so we don't have to worry about parking or any of that stuff. We can just head over to the Superdome and it's under police escort and everything, which means you're moving along. So, I'm just looking forward to kind of being around the city. I know it's going to be packed. We're going to get to spend a lot of time with the players and coaches. It's media day on Saturday, which is kind of an open deal where you can talk to anybody, which you don't normally get to do. Sunday's more of kind of a, you know, final word from the coaches. And then, everybody, I think early evening we'll have everything done and you'll get to kind of unwind and relax a little bit before what's a big day on Monday. It's no joke covering a national championship game, but it's going to be fun. I mean, I love the food in New Orleans. I highly recommend Felix's for oysters and Mr. B's if you're going to, you know, kind of ball out a little bit on a steak, or hit Brennan's for a milk punch, because, I mean, those are just all treats, and, you know, the whole city is just brimming with good food and drink. So, hope everyone enjoys it as much as I'm trying to.
Billy, as you take a look at this matchup between LSU and Clemson, you obviously are more up to speed on what's going on with the Tigers, being the LSU Tigers, and since you work for Go 24/7. So as you take a look at things, obviously against Oklahoma, that's a game that most folks thought LSU would win pretty comfortably. I don't think anybody saw Joe Burrow, even with what he had done up to that point, throwing for more than 400 yards and 7 touchdowns in the first half. That's just ridiculous. But how do you see this matchup between LSU's offense that's averaging 49 points a ball game against Clemson's defense that's giving up 11.5 panning out?
Yeah, he's fun to watch, man. He's one of those guys that you're going to remember where you were covering some of his games and what he was able to do and all of that. But look, I think in terms of the matchup, for Clemson, they've got a defensive line that can really get after the quarterback. They can make things difficult. I think, you know, against Ohio State was able to hit some big plays with their receivers, but overall Clemson was kind of able to impose their will and slow them down. And I think that if you're an LSU fan, that would be the concern, is seeing a little bit more of that. But I was talking with somebody else about this today. I mean, how do you bet against Joe Burrow? How do you bet against this offense and what they've been able to do all season? They've been so impressive from start to finish, and just it's hard for me to not pick LSU and to pick them to cover with just the way they've been so dominant, especially over the last 4 games.
I agree with you. And as far as your point regarding the pass rush of Clemson, that's something I was noticing earlier today, looking at the numbers. LSU's something like 95th in the nation in terms of the number of sacks they've allowed, and 30, and Clemson's, of course, like top 10 or top 15 in sacks with 42. So that will go a long way toward determining this ball game.
Yeah, no question. And that's where it starts. I think it starts in the trenches. And look, LSU has one of the best offensive lines in the country, and they won the Jim Moore Award. But can they hold up against a Clemson defensive line that has NFL talent stockpiled all over it?
Like you say. Oh, I'm sorry, Dave. I was just going to say just to follow up on what you were saying regarding, it's just hard to go against LSU with the way they've looked. But it still just sounds crazy. It's pretty mind-boggling to think that 75% of the money, or more than 75% of the money, is going on LSU, considering that Clemson has won, 29 in a row?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's kind of funny how Vegas is, but you know what? A lot of people were talking about Ohio State and LSU being the top 2 teams in the country. And I mean, I was one of those people that picked Clemson to beat Ohio State straight up and also to cover. And look, I mean, I just think, you know, what Dabo Swinney is able to do from a game planning perspective is just really impressive. And so, I think we're in for a really good ball game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I do think LSU is going to pull away late and cover.
Bill, this is Kyle. I'm a third member of the broadcast team here late to the game. I wanted to, since we're talking about the national championship game, I wanted to ask you just something that, you know, I've observed and thought about and looked into. Has there ever been another story in college football like Ed Ogeron, where a guy was, you know, basically considered a laughing stock when he was at Ole Miss, and then comes back, gets another head coaching job, and takes the team to the national championship? I can't think of anything similar.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the closest thing, and it's almost a stretch because of where Ed Ogeron was a few years ago, but the stretch would be Dabo Swinney. I mean, he was about to be fired by Clemson, chose to make a change at offensive coordinator and kind of bring things into the 21st century in terms of his offense, and that changed everything. They went and got Deshaun Watson, and then, you know, kind of the rest is history on their end of things. But, you know, in terms of, yeah, I mean, being a laughingstock, I mean, that's something that, you know, I think it's kind of fair to say, from where he was as the Ole Miss coach. Now he's much more polished. He's much sharper. He's adapted. It's been an incredible ride for Ed Ogeron, and I'm interested to see if he can put the final touch on a national championship.
I think Ed Ogeron's an incredible case study for people to look at as far as just how someone can learn from their mistakes and change their style of management and become a new leader.
I'm sorry, you broke up there. What did you say?
I said I think Ogeron's an incredible case study just from a management standpoint of how someone can change their leadership style and the way they do things and become a completely new leader.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's just somebody that always has the players' backs, always is doing what's best for them, I feel like, and protecting them. And I think that's the biggest thing that stands out to me in terms of what he's done so differently with this job. And he's just been the ultimate players coach, and it stood out.
Billy, for me, what's funny is I remember a handful of years ago, I said, was talking to people, and somebody was talking about LSU, and I said, LSU will be dangerous if they ever get an offense. And lo and behold, 2019, now early 2020, the offense has arrived. When you were talking about Joe Burrow, I want to get your thoughts on, do you think he'll be the number one pick in the draft or for NFL, or how far? Obviously, he's definitely a first rounder early in the draft, but do you think he'll go number one?
Yeah, I do. I don't think Cincinnati's got any choice there. I think they've got to draft a quarterback of the future, and you've got a Cincinnati, an Ohio kid right there waiting for you, and one
right.
That is a generational type of quarterback, in my opinion at least. And so I think that you've got to take him and get him on board as quickly as you can.
Well, maybe he'll drop to number two. I'm a Redskins fan, so maybe he'll get.
Same here. Trust me. Same here. I'm hoping the same.
That would be great. As far as the game is concerned, when it comes down to it, it's obviously going to be. I would think that LSU would have it's almost like a home game, but Clemson travels very well. I want to get your thought on that. Do you think the Superdome is a huge place? I would think that there would still be a lot of Tiger fans there. Clemson Tiger fans there.
I do. I think Clemson's going to travel fairly well. I think it's still going to end up being a 65-35 split. Some people are kind of thinking more like 70, but I just don't see it. The Superdome's huge. Clemson fans, like you said, travel pretty well. I mean, it could even end up being more of a 60-40, but I think the more noticeable side of things will be LSU for sure.
As far as LSU fans are concerned, I know that the fan base obviously wants a national championship, and rightfully so. There's a lot of great talent that's there at LSU every single year. Hypothetically, let's say LSU doesn't win. Will Ogeron be on the hot seat? Or, I mean, I know how some of the fan bases are so fickle. Do you think that they'll still be happy with a national championship appearance?
It depends on how they lose, but I don't see them really being, I don't see them really being upset with him and what they were able to do. But let's be clear, you've got a Heisman Trophy winner quarterback, and if you don't win a national championship, people are going to be fairly upset.
Right, no doubt about it. It's going to be a great game, and I know that a lot of fans. This is, I know that Clemson's a 3 seed, but it's like you said, it's going to be a great game, and certainly, I think it's going to be a really. You were talking earlier. Do you think? I don't even know, guys. What's the line on the game? I haven't heard recently on the point spread. Do you know?
It had opened at 3.5, and then it's I believe it's up to 6.
Yeah.
Latest I saw.
Okay. All right. So that'll be Billy. You think they're going to cover LSU?
Yeah, I think in a game that you're going to see more touchdowns than field goals and people trying to play conservative. I think you end up seeing LSU win by a touchdown, at least, I would say.
That'll be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. And certainly, it's hard to believe college football, the season's almost over, Billy. It seems like it was yesterday we were talking to you. But anyway. It's I guess it never really ends with the official signing day, and we have obviously spring football and everything. And so, how can people, before we let you go, how can people follow your work? Definitely would love to have you back on again soon.
Yeah, you can follow us at geaux247.com for all the national championship game coverage and certainly everything after that. And then check us out at ponystampede.com if you're trying to follow us for the SMU side of things.
That'll be great. Billy, thank you so much for the visit, and please be safe. And I guess I take it you're going to spend some time on Bourbon Street.
I'll probably be around there a little bit. I get a good chance to go over there enough as it is. So I'll probably be in a little bit more of like the uptown, maybe over near Tulane, which is kind of a little bit of a residential area. So don't confuse that. I'm not going to hang out with kids 10 years younger than me, but it's just kind of a cooler area, bar scene, around that residential area. So I'll be around, but I do get over to Bourbon Street a fair amount as well.
All right, well, have a safe travels. Billy, thank you so much for coming on, and look forward to, again, having you on real, real soon.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much, Billy. Please be safe. And he's not going – I don't think he's going to – he's not going to be like me and Kyle going to Bourbon Street. I think he's actually going to stay in the Tulane area. Speaking of which, by the way, I'm going to do this an audible on the air, which we normally don't do. Can we get Graf back on? We hadn't had Todd Graffanini back on.
Yeah,
with Tulane, but let's get him back on.
Yeah, definitely need to have Graf back on. He made that shift to the New Pelicans, Orleans Pelicans right. Play-by-play voice.
We'll have to do that. Graf is one of, and Kyle had a great insight. He should be a sports talk guy. He's fantastic. He's one of the best. We've had a lot of great guests on, but he's one of my favorites because he tells it like it is. He's actually a personality. When he comes on, he adds a lot, I think, to the show. I really do.
Great personality, very good, and you know, the sports radio thing, he's very quick-witted. And,
yeah, exactly.
He's
sharp.
He's been playing sports radio, so.
No doubt about it. It's not his first rodeo. It's not – the Sports Objective did not – he did not debut on the Sports Objective as far as being a guest. He's done it – not his first rodeo for sure. Bubba, you want to go to our next guest?
Yeah, we caught up with Will Vandervoort from the Clemson Insider to talk Monday night's game, and let's catch up with him right now.
All right, well, we have the national championship game coming up. Hard to believe the college football season almost done, Bubba, but now one of our favorite guests coming back on, talking about the Clemson Tigers.
Yeah, to get the Clemson perspective on this year's title game between the Clemson Tigers and LSU, I'm very excited to have back senior writer and editor of the Clemson Insider, Will Vandervoort. Will, welcome back into the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, man. Glad to be back.
Absolutely. It seems like it's the Clemson Invitational now. I used to call it the Alabama Invitational, but you guys find yourself back in the national championship game, a very, as usual, a tough opponent in LSU. But I want to get your thoughts on the season and maybe your thoughts going into the game this week.
Yeah, first of all, as far as the season goes, not really surprised to see Clemson back here again. Kind of what I think a lot of us expected, not only the guys that cover Clemson, but also the national media as well. This is, you know, they're a program that's kind of going to be in the conversation, I think, for a while to come. They've been in it for a while, and I think they're not really going anywhere anytime soon. So not surprised to see them here as another opportunity to win a national championship. I was thinking, though, the other day that it is kind of like I've been covering Clemson 15 years, and so I was covering them through the Tommy Bowden years and when they just couldn't get over the hump. And, you know, so it's still a little kind of weird for us that have covered them and know this program and watched it kind of grow under Dabo Sweeney to see them sitting here, you know, for a fourth time in 5 years playing for a national championship. I remember the Clemson fans longing for 1981 and to get back to that day and what it was like to win the championship. And now I think it's become, I don't want to say – apathy, but I think they've kind of just gotten used to it like it's the norm now. But maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe Clemson fans feel like those writers and they're kind of excited to kind of see their program in this position as much as we are as covering it. So, but as far as the, you know, this game coming up, man, I tell you what, it's going to be, and I know we'll talk more about it. It's going to be a difficult challenge for Clemson. I think LSU is offensively, they've been the best offense all year long. I think there's no argument there from what they've done from a points perspective, Joe Burrow, what he's done, those receivers that did just been outstanding all year, and how Joe Brady has come in with that system and has just made, you know, Joe Burrow just the Heisman candidate, Heisman Trophy winner that he is. And then as far as the other side of the field, I think they're better on defense than they were earlier in the year. They've gotten healthy at the right time, and it kind of reminds me of some NFL teams that, you know, they just get healthy at the end of the year, and then they go on that kind of run. Even though LSU was already in position, I just think the defense has gotten healthier and has made them an even better football team than what they were probably this time last month.
Will, you created a nice segue for me. Before we dive into this matchup specifically, just talking about the program, obviously – before Coach Sweeney was promoted to head coach, he had been a position coach there, and then, like you said, on Coach Bowden's staff. And then those first couple years, I guess year one, I think he won 9 games, but then year two, he just won 6 ball games. But then since then, there was a steady ascension, and then, like you said, the 29-0 mark right now, and then 69-4 over the last 5 years. Just from the outside looking in, I remember folks saying, I mean, not that obviously they knew the Clemson program could do great things, but as far as that national championship that you guys were longing for, they were wondering if that was realistic or not. And then has it been realistic? It's been just remarkable going for a 3rd in 4 years, like you mentioned. So, and just talk about that unbelievable consistency that Coach Sweeney and staff have achieved.
Yeah, and, you know, what Dabo's done is, sure, he came in 2009, he came in with a certain philosophy and culture that he wanted to build. Some of it he got from Coach Bowden and his time there. Some of it he got with Gene Stallings and working with him. And I think he kind of took both of those philosophies, working with those guys, and then with other people like Woody McCorvey, who's his development of player development and stuff like that over there, basically his right-hand man at Clemson. Just working with those kind of coaches kind of gave Dabo an idea of what, you know, he wants this program to look like. And so from day one, you know, it's been the thing he stressed about. Yeah, the goal is to win football games, but that's not the most important thing to him. The most important thing is developing young men and developing these guys as students and young men first, and then as football players, and help them maybe get to their goal, which is to go to the NFL. And then he felt like if they do those things, the winning would take care of itself. And so from the beginning, that's what he did, and that's why you see the consistency in this program, because Dabo's always been able to recruit. When he was the wide receivers coach at Clemson, there was no doubt he was the best recruiter on the staff. He's the reason why C.J. Spiller came to Clemson back in 2006 and shunned Florida to come to Clemson and stunned everybody. So Dabo's ability to recruit is never been in question. And then you put him as the head coach. He has his philosophy. He brings in these 4- and 5-star guys, and all of a sudden they start paying attention and believing in the culture that he's establishing. And I think we see it now in what they've done in the last 9 years, where they've won 9 straight seasons of 10 wins, at least winning 10 games. They've won 6 ACC championships, played for the national championship, now going on their 4th time, have won already 2 of them, and have been to the college football playoff 5 times, and have been to every major bowl game with the exception of the Rose Bowl in their repertoire. So it's a very consistent program that, like I said earlier, I just don't see, with the way they're recruiting now, with the #1 recruiting class in the country, I just don't see it ending anytime soon.
As far as Clemson is concerned with Dabo Swinney, one of the questions from the outside looking in, obviously it is speculation, but do you think that Coach Sweeney, being from Alabama, or going to Alabama rather, do you think he would, if Saban retires, do you think he would go there? Or do you think, for me personally, it looks like that he's got a pretty nice gig there in Clemson, South Carolina?
Yeah, you asked me this question 2 years ago. I would have said he's going to Alabama. There's no doubt. I was like 80% confident he'd go to Alabama. But then the fact that now they've won another national championship and they're playing for another, and, you know, he's so enriched into this community already, you know, it kind of comes to why go to Alabama. I mean, he's a legend at Clemson. He's no doubt already the greatest coach Clemson's ever had. And, you know, he's got a chance to keep adding to that legacy and can maybe win a few more national championships with the Tigers. So why go to Alabama when there's no guarantee of that? And then also you're just one of the other guys. You know, you're not Bear Bryant, you're not Nick Saban. You know, you're just kind of with those guys. Even if you win a national championship or two, the chances of getting to that level would be slim to none. So he would just be another coach at Alabama, where at Clemson he's going to be the coach and the legend and has a chance to really establish the Clemson program as one of the dominant programs in the history of college football, what he's done already here in his 12 years as head coach here.
One of the things I've always respected about him, I know Bubba does too, is the very fact that his Christian faith, every time he wins the game, he thanks God. To me, that's very important. I know that maybe everybody that's listening to this interview and the podcast may not agree with that, but something that is very important to Bubba and I for sure.
Yeah, and it's very important to Dabo, as you know, as you said. And Dabo is very strong in his faith, and I'm a Christian man, and so obviously, you know, I appreciate it for what it is as well. And as one, when I talked about the culture of the program, here's what Dabo does. Dabo never recruits a kid and tells him he has to be a Christian. Okay, he doesn't do that. What Dabo tells him is, this is what I believe in. That doesn't mean you don't have to come and play for me, or your son doesn't have to come play for me, because Dabo's a leader of men. And so if a guy comes in and he doesn't necessarily have the same faith as Dabo does, Dabo doesn't shun him. Dabo welcomes him with open arms and brings him into the program. And if he's a cultural kid, what that program has, they're going to bring him in. So, you know, I think people get confused with that, because they think Dabo, because of his Christianity and his faith, they think he's going out and that's all he's recruiting. That's not the case. You know, he goes and finds young men that are good young men, regardless of what their faith is. And if they happen to be Christians, then that's great. But if they don't, he doesn't force it on them. He doesn't ask them to go to chapel. He doesn't make them go. He doesn't do any of those things. And I think that's why players like playing for him, because he's just who he is. And he's honest with them right off the bat and tells them right when he walks into that door and he sits down with mom and dad, he lets them know what his faith is. And this is what he believes. And that's not going to change just because their son's going to come and play for them. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And kind of diving into this matchup, obviously one of the – probably the biggest thing that folks are interested in is seeing that LSU offense going against the number one scoring defense in college football. Clemson's allowing, about 11.5 points per ball game. And then you have LSU that's put up those gaudy numbers, like you said, all year long, with Joe Burrow throwing for more than 5,000 yards, and a 1,000-yard rusher in Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and then also a pair of 1,000-yard receivers. So how do you see that matchup shaking up or stacking up? And one of the things that really jumped out at me is how LSU's allowed 30 sacks, and then Clemson, of course, is near the top of the nation in sacks with 42. And as you look at those sacks, really – they're so spread out, it's remarkable.
Yeah, I think, you know, Clemson, when I look at this matchup, first of all, I think the LSU offensive line is the weakness of this offense. I think, you know, what Joe Brady has been able to do with his system is kind of masked that a little bit, because they're asking Burrow most of the time to make quick and decisive decisions on where he's going with the football. And, yeah, so there are times when he does keep it, and – But if you pay attention to the pressures that come out, Joe Burrow does a great job of of getting out of pressure. And you know, if it wasn't Joe Burrow, you imagine how many sacks this offensive line would have given up. It might be 60, because he gets out of a lot of sacks. Look at the Georgia game. I think Georgia sacked him 3 times, but should have had him another 5 or 6 times. And I think that's the weakness of this team. I think Clemson can get pressure to him. The question is, does Burrow read what Venables is doing fast enough to get the ball out of his hands? And I think the key when I watch this matchup is up the middle. I think with Tyler Davis and Niles Pinckney, those guys have to get, and Jordan Williams, they have to get pressure up the middle and get their hands and everything up in the face of Joe Burrow. They have to collapse that pocket immediately in the middle, make him uncomfortable, make him start to run. As good as he is throwing the ball on the run, if you're a defensive coordinator, that's still what you want, though, because the chances of a quarterback making a mistake are far greater when he has to roll out of the pocket and throw the football. So I think that's going to be the key for Clemson. And LSU doesn't – they're not a running football team. They're a very finesse offense, guys. They want to pass it all the time. They want to do those – you know, if you go watch New Orleans Saints, when you call them a finesse football team, that's what they are. They want to throw those quick slants, get the ball out. They use the passing game to set up the run. And then if they get a lead, then in the third and fourth quarter, they start running the football a little bit more and trying to be unbalanced. So I think for Clemson, the key is to really kind of try to confuse and shut down that offense as much as possible early in the game and make Joe Burrow start to have to play from behind, because you know, that's the one thing he hasn't done all year. He hasn't really played from behind when it matters most. And going into the fourth quarter in every game this year, they've had the lead. And so teams have had to try to stay with Joe Burrow and LSU instead of the other way around. And I think if Clemson can reverse that, that would be a big advantage for Clemson in this game.
Well, as Jeff Scott, your offensive coordinator, is doing double duty there, your OC, new head coach of South Florida, has that been a distraction at all for him? I know with early signing day in the back, besides putting together staff, he should have been able to just concentrate on being the OC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's actually it. I know it wasn't a distraction for the Fiesta Bowl, and I think that, and I don't think it is now. And the thing I think that's helped him is the fact that his dad, Brad Scott, you know, has been on Dabo's staff the whole time, and it was offensive line coach for the first few years under Dabo, and then he moved into a you know, administrative position with Coach Sweeney, and he's been doing that for the last 7 or 8 years, and. And so his dad is going to go with him to South Florida and kind of be what Woody McCorvey is to Dabo Sweeney, be his right-hand man. And so his dad has taken a lot of that pressure off of Jeff. He's handled a lot of those administrative things that a head coach has to handle when he first gets the job. That's allowed Jeff to kind of let his dad take care of that, who's a former head coach himself when he was at the University of South Carolina. He's handled all those things, and that's allowed Jeff to kind of just maybe on the side – handle his coaching staff and who he's going to hire. But as far as all the other stuff, I think Jeff's been able to just avoid that right now and has been able to focus on Clemson and game planning. He's been up here, you know, he came down the last week before they went to the Fiesta Bowl, and he, as he said, and no pun intended here, he was all in with, you know, getting his team ready for that game. And then he's been that way here ever since they've been back. I think he took a few days and went down to South Florida, but has come back early this week and has been practicing with the Tigers, and he's kind of been just focused just squarely on, you know, trying to see what they can do to beat this LSU defense.
I did not realize he was Brad Scott's son. So I remember the Brad Scott South Carolina teams very well. That was in the days where East Carolina used to play South Carolina on a regular basis in the 90s and beat them on a regular basis.
They did. So Brad has some experience. I think that's benefited because for Jeff, he got to see his – and also what's helped Jeff is his dad. Jeff was a probably teenage boy, I guess, when his dad got the job at South Carolina. But remember, Brad was a offensive coordinator and assistant coach on that Florida State team that won the national championship that year in 93. And so Jeff got to see his dad and how his dad handled it and the mistakes his dad may have made in that. And I think his dad also – learn from that experience and helping his son. So I think it's benefited Clemson that those two guys went through that together already once, and now they're kind of going through it again on the flip side. And I think Clemson's going to come out and be the benefactor of it all.
As you flip things around and look at the Clemson offense against the LSU defense, like you said, and that LSU defense is probably better than they get credit for, as much as they've had to be on the field, and so forth. But Trevor Lawrence, I wanted to start with him. That's what he finished up, 36 touchdowns, 8 interceptions to this point. And for the first, I guess, 7 games of the season, he had his share of struggles, 14 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, but he's been 22 to not a single pick over the last 7 games. So talk about his progression.
Yeah, ever since maybe the second quarter of that Louisville game, he's been almost perfect. I think he's completing like 84% of his passes since then. 23 touchdowns, no interceptions in that time frame. You know, he's been lights out. And the main thing with Trevor was he just realized he's got to take what the defense gives him. He's got a rocket for an arm, guys. He really does. He's you know, everybody can say what they want about Joe Burrow, but Trevor Lawrence is the better prospect of NFL quarterbacks because of his arm strength. And he can make NFL throws right now that not even Joe Burrow can make. So, you know, sometimes he early in the season, he was allowing that and all the Heisman talk, I think, to get to him a little bit. So he was trying a little too hard to make that big splash play, make that Heisman moment, if you will, knowing also that Clemson wouldn't have the schedule where late in the season people would be seeing him because they wouldn't be playing any marquee games with teams like Florida State and NC State and those guys, you know, down and struggling this past year. So he knew he had to – he was trying to make plays early in the season when they were playing Texas A&M and guys like that early in the year when all the eyes were on him, and it just wasn't working. And so after that Louisville game, or that second quarter of that Louisville game, I think he finally just realized, look, I just got to take what the defense gives me, go with my check down guys. When I do that, it's going to open up things the other way. And sure enough, if you look at the way he's just gotten better, now he still makes those unbelievable throws where you just kind of like, wow, did he just do that? That's still there, but he's not doing it as often now. He's picking and choosing on when to make that throw as opposed to trying to force it like he was doing early in the year.
And something I wanted to add about Trevor is what he did against Ohio State. When we knew he was a dual threat guy, and no doubt about it, but rushing for over 100 yards when ETN and the rest of the running game was struggling.
Yeah, I mean, and see, that's the thing that makes Clemson so difficult. So if you're LSU and you played Oklahoma, and they did a great job stopping Oklahoma. They held Oklahoma to 322 yards, which was the first time all year Oklahoma's been held under 430 yards. But when you look at Oklahoma and you really break them down, Oklahoma, everything revolves around Jalen Hurts. And if you shut Jalen Hurts from running the football and you force him to stay in the pocket and throw it, he's not nearly the passer that Joe Burrow is and Trevor Lawrence is. And so that makes it a little bit easier to contain him. Well, they can't do that with Trevor Lawrence because if they say, okay, we're not going to let Trevor Lawrence run, guess what's going to happen? He's gonna start hitting those slants, and he's gonna hit T. Higgins and those guys off the reads and things of that nature. And so it makes it difficult. Ohio State decided they were gonna take the wide receivers out, they were gonna take Travis Etienne out of the game, and they were gonna make Trevor Lawrence beat him with his legs. They didn't think he could do it, and he obviously proved them and everybody in America wrong because he ended up rushing for 107 yards, scored that 67-yard touchdown where he just outran their secondary. And it really kind of opened the door for what happened late in that game because he'd been running that quarterback design, quarterback draw all night. And then here they are when they need it the most and they got to win the game. He fakes the quarterback draw, sucked those linebackers in just enough, and then he jump throws that touchdown pass to Travis Etienne, who does the rest from that point on. It just makes it hard for teams to stop Clemson because they got so many weapons, and if you stop this area – then they're able to go to this area. And that's something LSU, even when they played Alabama, they hadn't seen that. They haven't seen that balance of an offense. And that's why I'm interested to see how LSU handles Clemson, because Clemson will be able to answer whatever they're trying to stop Clemson from doing. Very similar to what I think LSU is going to do on the other side of the ball with Joe Burrow.
You talk about that dynamic duo of T. Higgins and Justin Ross at wide receiver. What's T. Higgins' status going into this game?
He's great. He's got 100%. So the same thing with Ross. Ross got nicked up a bunch in that game as well. It was a very physical game. And I tell you what, those Ohio State secondaries, probably the best secondary. Listen, everybody can say how good LSU secondary is, but they're not Ohio State. Clemson's already seen the most physical and best secondary in the country. And LSU's good, but they're not that good. And I think Clemson's going to be able to do some things. And those two guys, they say they're both 100% and they're ready to go. You know, everything at practice has indicated that as well. So I think that's going to be a nice matchup. And I think Clemson's got a little slight edge in that matchup, better than they did against Ohio State, definitely.
How do you see this game playing out in terms of not only who wins, but also where the score is? I mean, obviously I talked about the Tigers only allowing 11.5 points a game. And I think what the Tigers of LSU are giving up, what, 21 or 22 points per ball game. And then both teams are averaging anywhere from 45 to 49 points. So do you think this one's in the like a 31-24 or a little more high scoring? Or?
Yeah, I think you're right about in the right range, and this is why. And I think, you know, when you look at Clemson's defense versus LSU's offense, I don't think there's much of a drop-off. I think Clemson's defense is an elite defense. that can play with anybody in the country. And I think they've proven that not only in years past, the last few years, but also what they did with Ohio State. And they were able, even when Ohio State was moving the football, they found ways to shut them down in the red zone. And Clemson's been great at that all year. They're the best red zone defense in the country in terms of not allowing touchdowns and touchdown percentage. LSU, though, on the flip side of that, is not very good. And so I think the difference with this game is LSU's good now on offense scoring in the red zone, so you've got good on good going. But when you flip it to Clemson's offense against LSU's, Clemson's offense is very good in the red zone. LSU's defense has not been very good in the red zone. They've given up a lot of touchdowns, red zone touchdowns, gave up four to Oklahoma. Even though that game was out of hand, they still gave up four red zone scores. And they've had issues with that all year long. And so their red zone percentage as far as touchdowns go are not very good. And I think that's going to be the difference in this game, because I think Clemson does have the better defense. I think Clemson will get a few more stops than LSU will, whether that's in the red zone or whether that's just forcing a punt. But I think that's going to be the result where I think Clemson's going to be able to get touchdowns. And LSU's going to kick a couple field goals. And as it was in the game against Ohio State, that was the difference in the game. And I think, again, that might be the case in this one.
A lot has been made about this game being played in New Orleans, the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. And so just how many tickets has Clemson sold? I've heard people saying that it was going to be 65-35 or 70-30. So how many tickets have Clemson sold through the university? Or how many is even allotted? And then obviously they'll buy a lot on secondary markets as well.
Yeah, so there are a lot of 20,000, both teams are, and Clemson sold out their 20,000. And that's not surprising. Clemson fans are known to travel. They had 30,000 people there in Arizona last week. So they are known to travel. And so they got their hands on some tickets. It will be a pro LSU crowd, just like the Fiesta Bowl was a pro Ohio State crowd, because Ohio State, one of their largest alumni bases is in Arizona, in the Phoenix area. And so it was a pro Ohio State crowd both times Clemson played them there. And so because of that advantage, Clemson played in that last game like that. And so it was sort of like playing almost in a small Columbus, as this will be a small version of Tiger Field, in the sense that I still think LSU will probably have 65-35. Fans, 65% to 35%. But I think there'll be a good contingency for Clemson there. It'll probably be somewhere right around that 25 to 30,000 range. And also keep this in mind, and people might be surprised by this, but on our message boards early, before the season even started, there were Clemson fans buying tickets to the national championship game because they felt like Clemson was going to get there. And they felt like if they didn't, then they'll just sell the tickets. So there might be a couple thousand that people aren't counting on that already had those tickets way before either of the teams were announced. You know what I'm saying?
No doubt about it. And like you say, with LSU being 80 miles away, and then obviously, I mean, just because that's 80 miles from Baton Rouge, I mean, there's LSU fans all across the state and that region. But with there being such a high demand for these tickets, I saw that the starting price on the secondary market is just over $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty expensive. Not as expensive as a couple years ago. I think the Georgia game set the record because all the Georgia Bulldog fans were trying to buy those tickets to play Alabama. I think that they were over 2,000 there, but I think this one's sitting around 1,000 bucks, which I know some people that bought them, guys. They're going. They went ahead and got theirs because they didn't want to. You know, they wanted to be there and be a part of it if Clemson wins another national championship. So. Like I said, I think there'll be 25 to 30,000 Clemson fans there. LSU obviously is going to have more fans because, man, New Orleans is nothing but – I mean, they love – nothing against the Saints, but New Orleans loves the Tigers of LSU way more than they love the New Orleans Saints. It'll be nothing but yellow and purple all over that town for the next week or so. And so Clemson, they're just going to – it's a road game. You know, and the players' attitude, when we talked to them the other day, they just talked about how 2 years ago they went down there to play Alabama in the Sugar Bowl, and they experienced the bowl and had fun and went down to Bourbon Street and did all those touristy things that you do when you go to New Orleans. They said this time around, it's all business. They're not doing any sightseeing. They're not going out. They're not doing anything. It's go there and try to win a football game and bring a national championship back to Clemson.
Yeah, as far as those ticket prices is concerned, that's easy to say that you're not going to do it. But when you're so passionate about a team like that and you're playing for a national title, it's tough to say no.
Yeah, it is. Hey, guys, I've bought tickets for Steelers games pretty close to that, you know. So, and those are just regular season games, because I love my Steelers. So, I don't – if any fan that does that, I have nothing against that, because I'd probably do it too if I was them, you know, because I do it with my Steelers all the time.
Will, I know we talked about it off the air before we started recording, but tell our listeners when you're headed down and some of the things that you'll be taking part in prior to the game on Monday.
Yeah, so we're going to head down tomorrow to New Orleans, being Thursday. The reason we go a day early is we get there ahead of the team, because the team's coming in on Friday. They're going to fly in, and they have a team arrival and a practice on Friday, so we'll be there covering that. And then also Saturday will be media day, and you know, media day it's gotten to be pretty silly, because you just like the Super Bowl does. They have all these people coming in wearing wedding dresses and all kind of crazy things, and the fans are right down there on top of it and kind of can watch everything that's going on, and so it's sort of a spectacle in and of itself. But it's fun. The players enjoy it. They have a good time with it, and so that'll be going on. And then Sunday is the coaches' press conference. So that's all we got. So that's kind of a light day, but we'll still have a lot of content for media day and things like that we've covered in practice. And then Monday's the game. And then, I tell you guys, when I've covered this will be my fourth one I've covered. It's the longest day of the year. If you remember what Christmas Eve was like when you were a kid and you were so excited just for Christmas Day to get there, that's what this is like when you go cover a national championship. It's just, you know, this is my fourth one, but it's still the same angst, you know. It's just you're excited to go cover the game and experience it, and you hope the team you cover is able to come out on top, because I tell you guys, I've been on both sides of it. It's a whole lot more fun when the team you're covering wins the game as opposed to the team you're covering loses the game. So, but it's a great experience, and so we'll have fun doing it, and, you know, hopefully that'll come across on our coverage on our website and, you know, and things like that.
Will, we really appreciate your time. It's been great hearing your insight and perspective on this matchup between Clemson and LSU. Before we let you go, tell our listeners where they can follow you on social media, and then also about your website.
Yeah, they can follow me at Steeler Will on Twitter, obviously, because as I said before, I'm a big Steelers fan. They can follow me there. They can also follow our website on Twitter, at Clemson Insider. You can go to our website, theclemsoninsider.com. Also on Facebook, The Clemson Insider. So we've got a lot of stuff there, a lot of content already on there talking about the game, a lot of content all the way leading up to it. There'll be tons of content after the game. So if you need to get your Clemson fix in, we're the place. And the best thing about it, guys, is we're free 24/7. We're always free. We're a free website, so people can come and read our stuff and don't have to worry about paying anything.
Thanks so much again for coming on. We really appreciate it. Safe travels as you head down to New Orleans, and best of luck to the Tigers.
All right, guys. Thanks so much, man. Enjoyed it. Had a good time.
Thanks to Will. Always great having him back on. And last year he was on, and Dabo and company won the national championship. Let's see if that happens again. If it does, he'll have to come on every year that Clemson is in the national championship game. I don't want to jinx the Clemson Tigers. Both are definitely like the Tiger Bowl, right, guys? Tigers versus Tigers.
Oh, my. For sure. No, it's all Tigers. I guarantee you the Tigers are going to win.
No doubt.
Something unique about this game, guys. I knew that these two programs hadn't met that much, but I believe this will be the fourth or fifth time Clemson and LSU have played, and all the matchups have been in the postseason. They have never had a regular season game.
That is crazy, especially with the brand. Those are two brand name teams. They're regionally, they are close to each other compared to. It's not like Hawaii and East Carolina playing or something like that, way away from each other. They're two great fan bases, you know, that would travel.
How close is Baton Rouge to Clemson, South Carolina?
Well, it's not next door. I'm just saying it's not one end of the country against the other end of the country. It's,
right. I know what you mean. I'm giving you a hard time.
Yeah. But that would be that. Maybe after this game, maybe the powers will do one of those Labor Day weekend kind of deals, the preseason, the start of the kickoff of the season. I really love those thank God they've been
week
doing
zero.
This. Yeah, week zero. Anything would be great for maybe they can do that. Speaking of adding games, Bub, I know you wanted to mention before we go, I know that you've got a timetable here, but I know the baseball team, we talk all sports here in East Carolina, and I know very excited to hear about they added a game to their schedule, right?
Yeah, Bubba's already gone, Dave, so you want to go ahead and take that one?
Yeah, I believe it's March the 6th, a Wednesday. I didn't realize he was gone. Appreciate you, Bubba, for all your hard work. He's got basketball practice now, but Liberty is coming to Clark LeClair. You can actually have 56 games on the schedule. Kyle, and I didn't know it before we started the show. He told me that we had 55, and so we added a game. So we have 56 games on the that's hard to believe that baseball season is so long. But 56 games that you can have NCAA for the schedule. So,
you know, I haven't even looked at our baseball schedule. Is NC State back on the schedule this year?
They are not. I'm trying to see if we can get putting it out
there.
So we
got 66 games, but a bitch ain't won, huh?
No.
All
no.
Right.
They were supposed to be – It was supposed to be, it looked like that we were going to get that deal where it was a neutral site game. It was really cool at Five County Stadiums, you know, where the Mudcats play. And
yes.
It was going to be like a charity game as far as proceeds were going to a certain charity. I can't remember which one off the top of my head. And it was a rumor. It came out. Both sides said they were working on it. And I don't know what happened.
I know. Not even for charity. Well, you know, some people are just scared. And they don't like getting beat. Well, that's okay. What we'll have to do is just beat them in the postseason again.
Yeah, that was an unbelievable game for sure, and that was one of those moments where.
Do you think Elliot Averett? Do you think he looks at Cliff Godwin and just says, "There's the man."
Yeah, I mean, I don't under. For me, we have. What's weird about the whole situation? There's a whole bunch of teams in North Carolina.
I think Elliot Averett looks at Cliff Godwin and says, "Now there's a man." And
there's
he gets
a man.
Scared. He gets scared, and he quivers. He quivers a little, and he said, "There's a man." And he goes to his wife and says, "I'm sorry, ma'am. I just can't be, you know," because he calls his wife ma'am at this point. He says, "I'm sorry. I just can't be the man Cliff is. You've married an inferior man." He calls his children. I don't know. You know, I'm assuming Elliot has children. He calls his children and says, "I'm sorry. I failed you as a father. I'll never be the man Cliff Godwin is."
Wow. Okay.
And
you heard it here first on the Sports Objective. It's a great way to keep the heated rivalry. I think the baseball rivalry is as big.
So.
I think the baseball rivalry is as big as the football rivalry. I really do, and I think that.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. Even Dave Doran, who looks like Toby from The Office, and is about you talk about a boring human being. You talk about The Office of Mike Leach. That's Dave Boring. Even he ain't scared. You know, even he'll play East Carolina, and you know we've beaten them twice. Now I know they've beaten us twice in a row.
But you wait with Mike Houston. Oh my God!
That's literally like beating. It's literally like beating someone with a major disability when you beat us under Scotty Montgomery without a hit coach, and then you beat us game one under Mike Houston. So we'll see how it turns out when they come to Greenville. Was it next year or the year after they're coming to Greenville?
Yeah, that sounds right.
We'll see if things don't go back to the way they were. But even Dave Doran's not scared to play us. But Elliot Averett.
Come on, Avant, you got to play us, baby.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm sorry if I'm saying his last name wrong.
That's all right.
But, you know, he's scared. He's scared, and it, like I said, it's because he knows he cannot be the man that Cliff Godwin is. And
just like the Tar Heels are scared to play us in football. And
I think the Tar Heels should be scared to play us in basketball right now.
Yeah, they are. Wow. This is how bad. I'll tell you how bad things are for the basketball program at UNC. I heard today. Well, you never know. I heard today on the David Glenn Show, which I love very much. Our friends at 94.3 The Game, they have it on 12-3 Monday through Friday. But anyway, there was a caller today that said that they were basically saying he's a UNC fan that he prayed to God that the Clemson, they've never lost to Clemson in Chapel Hill. He's afraid of that. So if they win that game, that is like a highlight to him of the season, the way I took it. And I was like, oh, my God, that's a –
Do you think
a big...
it's time to be serious for a moment, not that I really care, but do you think it's time for Roy Williams to retire?
No, I don't. I think there's a situation where they've had a lot of injuries, and they've got one of their best players out for, I think it was, he went out in December, Colby, my name escapes me right now. I'll think of it. Yeah, no, not Colby Gore. But anyway, he actually is out 4 to 6 weeks, and so I think that it's a situation where you were talking about earlier where expectations are to win a national championship if you're at that program, and I think that they're a tournament team, maybe a Sweet 16 team, I would say, right now. Who knows what will happen in the next couple months, but what?
You think they're a Sweet 16 team?
Maybe. I'm saying they have the potential, their ceiling, that's their, instead of making the Final Four like they potentially could do, I think that they may win a game or two, and that's about it in the tournament this year.
You think, what is their record right now?
I'll have to look at it, but I think that just being North Carolina, we'll see how, unless they, I mean, yeah, it's the season's still early as far as the conference. They could actually just make the NIT. I've said that to people, but I think at the end of the day, by March, I mean, we're just January now, early in the conference play. I think if they go on a losing streak, yeah, man, I mean, they could go just to the NIT. So,
CBI. We're going to meet them in the CBI.
Oh my God, that would be legendary. That, as our friend Steve and I go would say, that would be epic.
They would turn out a CBI invite, probably.
Yeah, I don't think they would. Yeah, I don't think they would. Do you have anything before we go, Kyle?
No, I'm done, man. I've talked crap about Elliot Abram.
All right, you had your little rant there, and I'm sure that y'all are going to be exchanging Christmas cards later this year, so that'll be fantastic. So maybe he'll invite you over to dinner, you and Jessica, and you can break bread with him here sometime soon. That'll be fantastic.
You'd be intimidated by me, also.
All right. Well, by the way, folks, make sure you definitely go to the game on Saturday. Pirates are going to be taking on SMU, and the game will be on, that'll be 2 o'clock. And by the way, get your coasters. Go early. Go about 11:30. Bubba's going to get there at 12:30, and he's going to get a set of coasters and probably sell them on eBay. So make sure that you go there and get them early. The first 500 fans get coasters.
I don't think the coasters are going to have quite the pull that the Snow Globe did.
The Snow Globes were fantastic. Oh, my God. I'm a huge fan of Snow Globes. But I love Snow Globes more than coasters, but, hey, we'll take them. But if we do get them, Kyle, I'm going to put them on Facebook for you so you can see them, okay?
Okay, I appreciate that.
I'll rub it in a little bit for you. All right, man. Well, if you don't have anything else, I appreciate everybody listening. And thanks, by the way, a lot of people have been the new year, I guess, Pirate Nation, now they're done with the holidays. Kyle, I appreciate everybody listening. We have people who are starting to listen a lot more again. I guess the Pirates are winning again with basketball, and it looks like a new year. People have got the holidays done. So I want to thank Pirate Nation for listening even more than usual.
Yeah, no, thanks everybody for listening. We've been promoting it a little better, I think. And, thanks to everybody out there. Keep listening. And, and tell a friend, man. Tell people to listen. If you like the Sports Injector podcast, suggest it to a friend. And maybe they don't know how to get a podcast. Tell them how to get it. Because a lot of people.
Yeah, I have to teach all people all the time on. I have to teach people all the time on the smartphone.
It's amazing to me in 2020 that there are people in our age range that don't understand what a podcast is. How do you listen to a podcast?
Right.
You have to own a pod.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to iPods, by the way, and Kyle knows that. He's talking about that, too. Apple way back in the day, a long, long time ago.
I remember the first podcast I ever listened to. But that's a different story for a different time.
That's right. All right. Appreciate our great guest, Billy Embody and Will Vanderwall. And obviously, we had Bubba Rosenbaum. Appreciate you, man. Kyle from the Brains Barber. I'm Dave Richmond. You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.